Hi, thanks, Kelly, and thanks, Rick. I've got my notes here. It's difficult for me to just talk off the cuff. I'm not an expert speaker or anything like that, you know. I appreciate the opportunity to share my life in Buddhism in our practice in particular. And so, you know, I especially like to mention the Monday night conversation this past Monday with all of the four teachers present. And talking about koans and how they do different things and how you can sit with them in different ways. I think about that koan that ends with, quick, what was your face before your grandparents were born? You know, I think that'd be a great koan to throw out at a children's birthday party. You know? But that's an entertaining koan, you know. It's clear and it's mysterious and hard to see, but it kind of tickles you. So that's the kind of spirit that I wanted to examine my relationship to a couple of the precepts that are koan-like to me. There's that first one that says, I vow not to kill. And then the one that I relate to in a different way is the one that says, I vow not to gossip maliciously. So I use that, and I'll probably use that in my talk as sort of a caveat to guard what I'm saying about that first one, about I vow not to kill. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about this in his book, Inner Being. And he says, in every country in the world, killing human beings is condemned. But the Buddhist training to practice non-killing extends even further to include all living beings. However, no one, not even a Buddha or a Bodhisattva, can practice this to perfection. When we take a small step or boil a cup of water, we kill many tiny living beings. The essence of our practice is to make every effort to respect and to protect life, to continuously move in the direction of peace and reconciliation. We can try our best, even if we cannot succeed 100%. So, once again, I jumped into that, my caveat about vowing not to gossip maliciously. That isn't a word-for-word quote, but that's basically what I think about, you know, when I think about observing that precept. You know, this talk is about my reaction to these things, and they're not, that's what's important to me. Like I was looking in my Bible, my old Catholic Bible, last week about, I was looking for the part in Exodus that talks about how witches are condemned to be destroyed, that one must destroy witches. And a little bit above that, a little bit before that, in the same chapter, talks about, you know, the fifth commandment, which I thought was thou shalt not kill. And I was going to juxtapose the two in my own mind and say, you know, how could these two be put together in the same statement? They contradict one another. But when I looked closely, when I looked, referred to the fifth commandment, it didn't say, thou shalt not kill. It said, thou shalt not murder. And so, you know, I kind of smiled at that. So that's the course they're taking. Thou shalt not murder. Murder is killing that's illegal. So, you know, killing in war, that's okay. Or killing as a capital punishment, you know, okay. You know, and abortion, yeah, it's legal. Lynching in the late 18th century and 19th century was legal, but the Supreme Court refused to pass against it. And you can go on like this, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to take up the time on this because, you know, the important thing to me at this point was my reaction. You know, it's hard for me to find words. My tendency to hold this institution up to kind of contempt, I guess is the word. It's inside me, you know. All of these people are responsible for the murders of the Jews. That's absurd. Of course it's absurd. It's my problem, you know. And it's what I have to sit with, you know, when I'm contemplating this precept, you know. My partner came up to me one day and said, you know, the Dalai Lama has a cat. I said, and I just brightened up. Really? I've been so upset about the idea of Buddhists keeping animals that eat other animals for pets, you know, and the Dalai Lama has one. Oh, this is great, you know. And then we looked into it and we found out that it was the title of a series of books. And my ego just deflated. Oh, Jesus. Almost had him, you know. And you guys may have remembered I had a problem with the idea of owning a pet that was a carnivore, you know, taking some dog or cat, castrating them, and then feeding other animals to them, you know. And we remember, and then a couple of weeks ago, my partner and I visited Alan Lazarus and his wife, Suzanne, and they have this new Finnish Spitz. It's the same, it's from the same litter as their previous one, who passed away a couple of months ago. And this Spitz's name is Lumi. And right away she runs out and she's just this little ball. I mean, she's like a cartoon character out of a Chuck Jones cartoon, you know. I mean, she looks just like she was made by the guy who made The Roadrunner and Pepe Le Pew and How the Grinch Stole Christmas and Rikki Tikki Tavi. And as soon as I said Rikki Tikki Tavi, which was a movie that he made, Suzanne picked up on that right away because she was in India where she first read that story. She says, yeah, he's a little mongoose, you know. So he starts teething on my hand, you know, and he doesn't break the skin, but he's just going at it, you know. And at one point, you know, he starts licking my hand, and it's like he's saying, I'm not really trying to hurt you. I'm just practicing what I need to practice, but I would never hurt you, you know. So, and then at one point I held his head, you know, in my two hands, pushed his hair back, his fur back. And I could see the shape of his skull was this aquiline thing, which was designed to fit into small little spaces where prey would be hiding, you know, a small little animal would be hiding from him. And and I looked at his little snout. He has this short little snout, and I saw the teeth, and I said, if I was about a fraction of my size, I'd be in trouble here, you know. And at one point, you know, I mean, we were playing with the dog, and Suzanne was trying to teach the dog to behave and everything, and we weren't helping at all. It's just way too much fun to play with a little dog like that. And at one point, the dog started talking. And I don't mean barking, you know. You know, it's not even like that little sound that they make sometimes when they yawn, you know. Yow. But this dog actually started declaiming. I mean, you could understand it. You know, it was this bright tenor, you know, and it was loud, and it was, he was just talking like this, and this voice came out of this small little animal, you know, like he's James Earl Jones or something. I mean, it was amazing, you know. And I laughed, and I hadn't laughed like that in years. I mean, deep guffaws, belly laughs. It felt really good to laugh like that, you know. And I thought about, you know, my reaction and, you know, the kind of thing that comes from me that has a problem with pets, you know. I think about how my mother and her sisters would talk about, you know, pet love being a white thing. You know, white people love their pets. You know, they'll pass somebody starving in the street, but they'll spend all this money and all this time and energy and attention to these little animals. You know, they sleep with their pets. And then I think about the time I was about 5 years old and I got lost. My mother looked for me all day long. She couldn't find me. She had the police out looking for me. And then she finally thought to look in my pet dog's kennel, and there I was asleep with my little dog, with my little pet. So I guess that's all the notes I have. This is the thing about practice is that it's not simple. It's not something you do, you know, for a half an hour on Sundays. That's what I used to like so much about Catholicism. You just did it for a half an hour, you went through the motions, and then you forgot about it, you know. But this, you know, these sorts of things don't leave me. These concerns, these questions, and they stick with me. So thank you for giving me the chance to air it out a little bit. Thank you.
Thank you, Percy. Well, that was a very beautiful and rich talk this morning. Thank you so much. So much to think about. I could really just feel your talk this morning. And I could feel your inquiry, and I could feel the joy and feel the questions. And it's a very deep reminder that the practice is always every moment is an opportunity to practice if we would be with it. Part, like you said, it's hard to find the words, but yes, just thank you so much for all of those.
You remind me of the interview I saw with Thich Nhat Hanh and Oprah, and she asked him how often he meditated, you know. And he said, he looked at her with this little smile and said, every moment.
Percy, thanks a lot.